Even on the road, you have to stop for a bite to eat every now and then, right? A cup of coffee, too, although always in this job with a microphone in hand.
Yeah. If I say Brexit to you, what do you say?
I say, like, it's diverting my bus and causing a problem.
It's diverting your bus?
On the way home when they have, like, protests. Yeah. I see a sign and I'm just like, oh, my God. Here we go.
All right, careful. I'm going to let you pay attention to that coffee, whatever it is that you're doing.
Thank you.
From the UK, inside the European Union for now, special reports this week. Brexit, finally, from American Public Media. This is Marketplace. In London today, once again from the studios of the BBC, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Thursday, the 28th of March. Good as always to have you along, everybody. There is a certain practicality to this whole Brexit thing. Sort of like Maddie there a minute ago. Brexit for her is like traffic on her way home. Sometimes you just got to deal with it. It's a practicality that maybe we didn't get to yesterday up in Boston. A practicality that follows right on from our premise this week that while Brexit is a political story through and through, those political decisions have real meaning when business and the economy are on the line. So if you are being really practical, say trying to run a business in this economy, the Brexit narrative goes like this. Brexit is a big deal, sure, but the smaller your business is, the bigger a deal it is. We found Exhibit A to that truism at the Farm Girl Cafe the other day up on Portobello Road.
Let's talk to Enrico. Enrico, my friend's going to stick a microphone in your face.
No,
tell me your name again.
My name is Enrico.
Enrico what?
Enrico Zillo.
You're from Mexico, Spain?
No, I'm actually Italian.
Italian?
Yes.
Very good. How did you wind up here?
Well, I moved to London 20 years ago as a student. So then I stayed here working. Then I set up my own business. So it's been a while. It's been a long time here.
What kind of business?
Fashion business. So we design clothes here in London, manufacture them in Asia, and sell all over the world, the U.S. included.
So you've got a vested business interest in Brexit and this whole thing.
Big, big problem on my hands, yeah.
Well, so tell me about that.
Well, main issue is that, you know, we manufacture outside the UK, bring everything to the UK, and then we distribute around Europe. If Brexit happens, we won't be able to distribute as effectively from here. We would need to set up a company in Europe to do that.
Let me let you get your coffee.
Yeah,
sorry to interrupt.
You. And which basically means a lot of cost, complication. We're not a very large business, so for us, you know, to be able to continue to operate effectively, setting up another company, let's say like in the Netherlands or something, or another country that is logistically attractive for us, it will be a huge cost and a complication, which would be happily do without.
So what are you going to do? Because, look,
it's
not happening on Friday, right?
Yes.
It's not happening on the 29th.
Yeah.
But it might happen on the 12th or the 22nd.
Well,
what are you going to do?
Taking a risk, because probably the most sensible thing to do, I mean, it's a difficult decision, because either you invest the cost and you assume it's going to happen, and then make the expenditure and the operation, train the people, and effectively it's a one-way decision. You can't unwind it once you do it.
Right.
I would probably, you know, I'm a small business. I would kind of rate myself on relatively more prepared on the subject than many others, given the size of our company. But I would say there is a lot of businesses of our size that will be completely affected and unprepared for anything that could happen.
Give me a sense of size. How many people do you employ?
20.
20? So
yes.
You know, it's not huge, but it's not small.
And more than, I'd say, like 60% of our staff, it's also, you know, from Europe. So they also have a
right.
labor
so
issue you, as well to
right,
consider.
Of
yes.
course. Have you become a British citizen?
I'm in the process, but I'm not yet. So also potentially,
that's a whole other thing
I'm on
for
the
you.
Firing line as well.
How much of your time in the last year and a half have you spent thinking about and dealing with Brexit?
I would say it's probably, and with no underestimation, about 25% of my daily time. So it's like a huge amount of time spent. And you could probably argue, why have you not really much about it since you've been thinking so long about it, but because it's so difficult to actually make a decision. But it's something that's on my mind every day. I read the news to the detail every day. It is quite a stressful situation. Plus, you know, also, you know, being Italian, you know, I've been here 20 years. I kind of a little bit feel disowned from the country where I spent most of my time working and building a business. But of course.
Thank you for your time. I'll let you drink
coffee. Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Coming up after a quick break, we stop at a different table at the Farm Girl Cafe. Also, our BBC colleague Anu Anand answers some of your questions. The thing about doing these kinds of interviews is you just have to walk around talking to people. Your producer finds likely prospects, warms them up, gets a quick biographical sketch, and gives you the high sign. So once I let Enrico get back to his probably by then cold coffee, over on the other side of the cafe were the next opportunities.
Sorry, I'm just going to make myself comfortable here.
Okay.
Do me a favor, tell me your name.
Gabriella.
Gabriella what?
Gabriella Goodinho-Moxon.
So if I say Brexit to you, what do you say?
I say, oh, shit.
All right. Thanks for coming to the interview. Why?
I personally am of the opinion that we never should have had the referendum to begin with. I think that was the biggest mistake.
What do you do for a living?
I'm trying to be an actor.
How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well. Auditioning. I've got a day job. Getting by.
So if Brexit happens, whenever and however, whatever form it takes, what's that going to mean for you, do you think, day in and day out? Anything?
I think in an artistic perspective, between, for example, Hollywood and the industry here in London, it's going to make connections more difficult. No one knows at the moment what Brexit is going to entail at all. So in terms of travel, in terms of visas, things are going to get more complicated. I think also with the economy, we've already seen the effects, and like the pound is losing a lot, so people just don't know what's coming.
All right, so we're going to get to the California guy here for a minute. Tell me who you are.
Parker. My name is Parker.
Parker what?
Arnt. A-R-E-N-T. Just like the word without the apostrophe.
All right, we're going to do this. We're going to do this fast because your flapjacks have come.
Okay.
Why are you here?
I'm here to audition for drama schools out here. And
you're both actors.
Yeah,
it's a couple.
Yeah.
It's an acting couple. Is that where we are?
No. Yeah.
Not a
couple.
Not a couple.
Friends.
All right. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. One of my best friends. Yeah.
If I say Brexit to you as an American trying to get a job here in London, what do you say?
I've had a lot of discussions about Brexit with Gabriella's English friends, who I got to meet over here, and I think sort of the general feeling that we have towards it is: do we want to let people in, or do we want to close ourselves off? And the question has gone from being a casual one to a global one. So what I'm worried about is not necessarily the immediate effects, but what the effects are going to be going forward as we try to develop as a global society versus just these little countries. Because we have much bigger problems that are not getting even discussed because we're focusing on a question we've been debating for as long as humanity's been around.
Thanks for taking the time.
Right on, absolutely.
Please,
thanks, guys.
Have some breakfast. Thanks a lot.
I mentioned yesterday we took a trip out to Bath this past weekend. Had a chat with our BBC colleague, Anu Anand. We did a little walkabout and then sat down in the Parade Gardens Park on a lovely Sunday afternoon, went over some of your Brexit questions and her on-the-ground answers. So here with me, reading her question number one.
Mr. Rizdahl, fellow naval officer here. My family has orders to Portsmouth, England. There's a big Navy base there, obviously, in June. My wife and I debate whether Brexit will be good for us or not. Our salary is going to be paid in dollars. Is that going to have more buying power? Will the tariffs and logjams on imports and exports have a greater detrimental effect? Let's broaden that to expat packages over here and American and foreign business people coming here to live and work.
You know, it still boils down to the fact that your dollars will buy you more Britain at the moment. Now, no deal is that kind of really worrying aspect. And, you know, if that happens, obviously everybody will be affected. I mean, one third of the fresh food in my local supermarket Yeah, if there's a no deal or major disruption or tariffs or whatever,
yeah.
You know, my kids, they don't really care about Brexit. They're a lot younger. They're 7 and 9. And my son the other day at the breakfast table went, Mama, where's Costa Rica? And I said, it's in Central America. And he said, oh, well, I can still have my pineapples after we leave the EU.
That's amazing.
So look, I mean, you know, Britain has changed so much in the last 20 years. You know, French wine, mm-hmm. When my husband was growing up, wasn't that plentiful, even though it's next door. I can't imagine a Britain without cheap French wine, right? So, you know, it could change. And you got to take that into consideration.
More Anu after the break. Coming up.
And at worst, if we have a no deal, a lot of our honeys may get stuck.
The sticky business of Brexit. But first, sure, let's do the numbers. A calmer day on Wall Street today. The Dow Industrials up 0.3%, 91 points, 25,717. The Nasdaq edged up 0.3%, picked up 25 points, finished at 76.69. The S&P 500 grew 0.3%, 10 points, 28 and 15. We're on this side of the pond. Thought we'd see how some London-based companies are doing. Fiat Chrysler's main office is here in London. Shares of the automaker down 2% today. Shares of British Petroleum, BP, technically, up 0.8%. Shares of global telecommunications giant Vodafone slipped 1.4% today. Back home, Wells Fargo CEO Timothy Sloan said late today that he is going to step down immediately and retire from the company on June 30. Wells shares added 0.6% before that announcement. You're listening to Marketplace. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. I want to tell you about another podcast from Marketplace. It's called The Uncertain Hour. This season goes deep inside the war on drugs, because to understand how we've handled the opioid crisis so far, you need to go back in history, starting 30 years ago when President George H.W. Bush held up an actual baggie of crack cocaine during his first national televised speech. There is, though, a strange backstory to where that baggie of crack came from, and it's a moment we've been dealing with ever since. The new season is out now. Listen and subscribe to The Uncertain Hour, wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. It occurs to me as I set this next segment up that there are two themes to today's broadcast. First of all, the practicalities of running a business in the Brexit economy. Also, food.
There we go. Neil's Yard, Daring Borough Market. Man, you just hang out here and eat for days.
We made our way to the Borough Market here in London the other day.
I'd like one of everything in this stall.
Shops and stalls selling lots of stuff.
I'm not having any salt and pepper squid. That's all I'm saying. There's a very big line, I know. I'm still not having it.
Not all of it necessarily appetizing. Around the corner from the squid place, though, was a stall selling something quite a bit more pleasant.
How are you?
I'm well. Do you have a moment? I don't want to take time away from business.
No, that's fine. Don't worry.
Lovely.
I was about to have my lunch, but it's
well,
all good.
Well, good. So are we. So we'll do this fast, and then we can all eat.
Okay, go on.
Tell me who you are and where we are.
Okay, so I'm Samantha Wallace, and I'm the co-owner of From Field and Flower, which is a specialist in honey from around the world, here at Borough Market in London.
How's business?
Good. Yeah, it is good. It's spring, so people are kind of coming out and enjoying the spring bounty. For us, Borough Market is always pretty busy. It's a big attraction for tourists, but also people really interested in food.
So if I say Brexit to you...
You see my face has gone very rigid.
I guess we're done here. Interview is finished. I've gotten my answer. Tell me why. Why do you react that way?
Well, we have two problems around Brexit. One is we employ Europeans in our shops. So we work with European people who lived here and have been here for years and years and years and have had no problem. But now with Brexit, there is potentially a problem. And they weren't allowed to vote either, so that's an issue. The other thing is that we work with small producers from around the world, and a lot of our honey comes from small producers in Europe.
Huh.
They rely on us a lot for their income. We are one of their major buyers, so we often buy a whole year's supply of honey from a family of beekeepers.
Wow.
And that is a massive income stream for them, but also it's a big part of our product that we do here. And with Brexit, that could become very complicated at best and potentially very expensive at best, which could be very tricky for us to manage because we're a very small business. And at worst, if we have a no deal, a lot of our honeys may get stuck for who knows
no
how
pun intended.
Long. Yeah, months and months potentially.
So what are you going to do?
Well, previous to Christmas, we'd started to stockpile, so we'd started to buy in bulk from our European suppliers, but we have very limited space and, frankly, cash flow to do that.
Yeah. And honey takes a lot of room, too.
It takes up a lot of room. Yeah. It doesn't expire, which is a blessing, but yes, it never expires.
I had no idea.
So that is good.
Well, then all that stuff in my kitchen cabinet that gets all crusty and gross?
Oh, you can eat that. That's just crystallized. So that's liquid honey. All honey is liquid sugar, effectively, and over time it sets and granulates, so it's totally edible.
Okay.
But it's a different texture.
All right. Anyway, back to your stockpiles.
So we tried to stock up as much as we can because we thought we were exiting on the 29th. But our government has been a bit back and forth on the issue, shall we say? That's a slight understatement. So we don't know what to do now because we're out of space. We have no space to stockpile anything else. We have very limited storage here in the market. But we're also going to run out of cash flow because this means that we have to buy in advance a lot more than we would buy normally. And we pay all of our suppliers on delivery. So we don't have any credit or any terms because they're so small. They need the funds. They can't have big credit arrangements for people like us, sadly.
How much does an order of honey cost you, your average order?
I would say, on average, certainly speaking for one particular supply line, which is from Italy, they're one of our main suppliers, it's probably, we're talking anywhere between 5,000 and 10,000 euros a time. And that's every 3 months, something like that, depending on the time of year. And getting it here is relatively easy right now, but what happens after whatever shape it takes, whatever change occurs, unless there's absolutely, we give up on Brexit entirely, which would be very nice, but I don't think it's going to happen, sadly. We just don't know. It's going to cost us more, for sure. Time-wise, it's cost us a lot more in our time to try and organise it. Customs nightmares to deal with, all sorts of things. We've got no idea.
Thank you so much, Samantha. I really appreciate your
time.
Thank
you.
I'll let you
Good
go get your lunch.
Thank you. Take care.
You don't have to look too far at the Borough Market for good food and for good food Brexit stories, because up the alley from the honey place, cheese, French cheese.
Bonjour, monsieur. Ça va?
Ça va et vous?
Ça va bien? Tell me who you are and where we are.
Alors, here we are in Borough Market, and I'm Jean Hubert, French guy selling French cheese.
So if I say Brexit to you, Jean Hubert, what do you say?
I say, I don't know. I'm waiting to have more answer, like everyone.
What's it going to mean for your business?
Probably in the rise of in tax, stuff like that.
Rise of tax. Taxes, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. The problem is we absolutely don't know yet.
But you're a French guy selling French cheeses, I'm sure, right? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of good English cheese here, but there's French cheese here too, right?
Yeah.
So you're going to have to pay more to get your French cheese in here?
Yeah, I think so. After we wait, everyone is waiting, the government tell us something really... We're all waiting for that because I guess that, yeah, the tax is going to rise, especially for the product who directly challenge the English product.
Right.
So we don't know.
How's business right now?
It's quite okay.
It's quite okay or good?
It's quite okay for now. We don't feel really like the Brexit going to happen. We don't feel it right now. For us, for cheesemonger at least, as we're selling fresh product, it's the weather, the most important.
The weather.
The weather, yeah. If it's hot, people are not really attracted to buy a big slice of Conte.
Huh.
If it's cold, yeah, that starts to be nice for us. Huh. So we're more depending on the weather than on the Brexit for now. For now.
Thank you very much, Jean-Robert.
Cheers, guys.
So we've had Italians running businesses here in this Brexit economy on the program today. Brits, of course, also a Frenchman. Now an American, a bookseller of both cheap and pricey volumes.
I have everything in my store from 6 quid Penguin paperbacks, which are the ones that are first edition, first printing.
Right.
And they're 6 quid, so like about $8.
Right.
All the way up to my most expensive thing is Jane Austen's best friend's copy of Sense and Sensibility, which is 20,000 pounds.
Yeah. Do you have that here or is it like in some safe deposit box?
No, it's here.
Jane Austen's best friend's copy.
Right here. So this is actually the second edition.
Okay. So first of all, you're touching this with bare hands. I sort of expected.
You can touch this.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I hand this
to customers all day long. People love holding this book. I think books are meant to be held and loved. The white glove thing is actually a myth. You don't actually want to wear white gloves because then you can't feel the pages and then they rip.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
I'm totally giving this back to you, though.
Okay.
I'm not going to drop it because holy cow.
Allison Devers is her name. The second shelf is her store.
Tell me where we are.
We are in a very tiny courtyard hidden away in Soho, right off of Piccadilly Circus Station in London. And I opened this bookstore about 4 months ago to be it's a rare antiquarian and modern first edition bookstore of books by and about women.
You're not originally from around here, are you?
No, I moved here from Brooklyn, New York, about 3 years ago. I'm on a temporary work visa, so...
Aha. Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Why'd you come here?
London is a wonderful book town, and it's a great... I wanted to learn the rare book business, and it's kind of gone really fast.
What's it like trying to start up a business in the UK now with Brexit and confusion and all of that?
Well, for me, as an American, there's not too much that is getting in the way directly surrounding Brexit. I mean, obviously, everyone is really nervous. The book trade is very lucky, the rare book trade, in that there's already sort of no VAT on books or like tax between countries. So that is something that no one is going to be changing the rules about how we sell and ship books, I don't think. And yet, at the same time, I think, you know, if people are economically impacted and concerned, they spend less money. That affects everybody.
Are you worried at all for your visa, by the way?
My visa is totally like temporary, and like I just decided, you know what? I recently got extended for 2 years. I don't know if I'm going to get to stay here or not, but I just figured my business is flexible enough that I can try. And if I get to stay here, which I don't know if I will or not, then that's great.
Do you source anything from the continent or from Europe, or is it all English language that
you're
doing?
I source stuff from the continent. I do, yeah.
Do you travel over there and bring it back, or what do you do?
I've gone to Paris several times and brought back some things. So I was supposed to be at a conference this weekend. This was the original Brexit weekend date, and I was supposed to be at a conference called the Association of Writing Programs Conference. I was giving a panel, and because of the air tickets and my costs of running my business, I got so worried about the idea that the airports didn't have like just a deal that I would not get back, almost like a snowstorm. Like I wouldn't, like, because they were saying on the website, if you try to read it, it's very muddled. They're like, we expect delays. They don't know like for how long or how they're going to process all the people coming in and out. So I just canceled. Then as soon as I did that, they bumped Brexit.
Well, look, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I was all excited when I got here to go to a soccer game. The English Premier League, one of the best in the world. Pity then that the whole league is off this week for European Championship qualifiers. But be that as it may, the Premier League figured prominently in your questions about what Brexit is going to mean beyond just pure business and economics. Out we go once again to Bath and our BBC colleague Anu Anand.
Some people's only exposure to the UK is through soccer, the English Premier League. How, if at all, is Brexit going to affect the world of soccer and transfer payments, which run for the big players into the tens of millions of dollars? Right? I'm a soccer fan. I'm curious.
This is a great question. All right. So the Premier League is very international, and it's very lucrative. $6 billion revenue in 2016, right? The rules right now say that Premier League teams can have up to 17 what they call non-homegrown players, all right, so European or others, in their 25-man squads. Brexit, and certainly no-deal Brexit, could change the visa rules, you know, the work permit rules, and it would mean that even the European players would have to suddenly abide by the more general immigration rules, right? Now, the interesting thing about this is that the national body, the Football Association, is using Brexit as a bid to say, let's have more English players.
Right.
They want to cut the number of foreign players on each team by 5. The opinion amongst team managers is mixed, as you can imagine. Yeah. You know,
but many of whom are themselves probably not from the UK, right?
Not from the UK. But here's another interesting little fact. This January's transfer window was pretty quiet because, you know, everybody wants to wait and see. You don't want to spend millions on a player who suddenly won't have a right to be here.
The BBC's Anu Anand with us from Bath. The other day. Instagram is where you can find a bunch more of the work we have been doing over here. More stories from some of the people we have been talking to. We're at Marketplace APM. Check out our website for more of Anu's Q&A, your Brexit questions, her answers. This final note on the way out today, a turn of sorts to tomorrow's program. It's going to be Friday. Maybe you'll stop at the pub for a pint on the way home. We did the other day.
Mind if we chat for a little bit? All right, great. You get to go first because you're closest to the mic.
Oh, yeah,
tell me your name.
I'm Sam. Sam Walsh.
Sam what?
Sam Walsh.
What brings you into the pub this evening?
Pub? Mostly a beer.
What's your beer?
Carlsberg. Yeah.
What do you do, Sam?
What do I do? Yeah. I'm a bartender.
Do you work here?
I don't work here, no. Right. I work in Kingston, in O'Neill's, an Irish pub.
Is it going to make a difference in your life?
Brexit?
Yeah.
I imagine it's going to make a difference in everyone's life.
How?
Well, business is going to go down. Already there's been a price increase in bars and stuff on ales. I've noticed that where I work. Everything's gone up by at least 35p. And the ones that are from Italy, like Peroni and stuff like that, they've raised significantly more as well.
Is that cutting in your tips?
My tips? I don't really get tips. It's not in America, unfortunately. You don't get tip much.
Nobody leaves a pound on the bar for the bar?
Maybe once in a while. Most of you get bought a drink. That's about as far as it goes, though.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, you can't complain about that, but...
All right, so two things. First of all, always tip your bartender peeps. Second of all, we got to go. The Dow up 0.3% today, 91 points to the good. The NASDAQ also up 0.3%, picked up 25 points. S&P 500, any guesses? Yes, 0.3%, climbed 10 points, that index did. Amir Bibawi, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Heron Bekela, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. The managing editor is Deirdre Depke. I'm Kai Rizdahl from the BBC in London. We are back here one more time tomorrow. This is APM.